sure was quick.
Usually, I have been preempted at one time or another by some of the older and long-winded members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think one time out here in the north part of town, one of the older members took 48 minutes to introduce me and didn't leave me a great deal of time. I appreciate it, and my name's Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of a merciful God and the facility of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober for 21 years and 6 months and some 5 days. And I do not say that in a boastful way. And I don't think that in our program of Alcoholics Anonymous, these birthday parties are for the business of boasting of anything. But I do think that some of the hard role that we follow in Alcoholics Anonymous taken out by the fact that maybe when we're a little bit new in the program, we know that it can be done, that you can stay sober for a long time in AA, even though we never should get away from the 24-hour-a-day situation in our program. Because I think if you were like I was when you came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you were all eyes and ears, and you didn't know what was going on. And when I came, a day was an awful long time. It was a terrifically long time. And I have to date myself and let you know I'm an old member in AA. It has been humorously said that the reason that Dr. Bob and Bill had such a little bit of trouble in making the AA program was the fact that there were no old members around. And I don't think there's anything more disgusting than for one of us, to look at a new man and say, you should have had it as hard as we did, you know. Well, we have in the last few years trying to, with all of the extraneous things that have come to us outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think in some cases we have set about to try to deprive the drunk of his right to suffer. And this is not the way it worked for me, and I'm sure not the way it ever worked for you. And really, the further I go, sometimes the less I'm sure of. I've been in AA, as I said, for 21 years, and I can't give you a good description of an alcoholic. I really can't. There's 2 or 3 descriptions in the big book, and medicine and the doctors had just had a hell of a heyday writing on what constitutes an alcoholic. And some of the psychiatric descriptions of us would just lead you out the door screaming. But really today, I couldn't give you a great description of what an alcoholic is unless it would be a person who can't drink. With any success. I can't tell you what one is, but I can tell you what one ain't. I was on a plane recently flying out to Las Vegas to try to save a few souls in that plane. And I sat next to this window. I've always liked, I don't know why, you can't get out, but I always liked it next to the window. And one of these 3 signifiers, and this gentleman, and I'm sure he must have been, because he conducted himself later in a way that would discredit any other testimony, but he sat down, he was impeccably dressed. And as a stewardess, you know the procedure if you fly much, the first thing they do is start hustling the booze. And They don't care whether you've got a ticket or not. If you just buy the food, you know, that's right. And he sat over here, and she said, "Would you like to have a drink, sir?" And he said, "Yes, I would." And she brought him one, you know, the ounce and a half Mickey, and they pour some stuff in it. And it was the most disgusting sight I've ever seen. He set it on his little tray there and began to read.
Probably an alcoholic.
And this is so simple that I was waiting for somebody to say something that would get me sober or clarify everything. And kept coming to AA meetings, and they had some misinformation in those days that if you just keep coming to the meeting, something will happen to you. Well, it does to a lot of folks. They get drunk. And I studied very seriously for a long time, and I found out that the recovery from alcoholism is very simple. And I believe that most of the secret to it is in four words in our 12th step. And it has an inference there that absolutely does away with lazy people and sitting down folks in AA. And these are the four words that read, as a result of. Nothing happens to you, my friend, in AA until you do something. You can come to AA until you get corns on your fanny up to your earlobe. And you listen to a lot of smart folks like me, but until you do something, you ain't gonna get it. And this may be sad news to some of you. It might move you out of the back corner of that club, but it's a simple fact. And I had to learn that the hard way, and I don't say it sarcastically, but AA is a doing program. I'm sure you already know I'm an English major. I've up until now used four words you didn't understand. But there are more verbs in this book of ours, I suppose, than any other dissertation or piece of writing that exists anywhere. It's always talking about doing or giving or making. And there's one in every step that we have in our program of recovery. And there's not any of them there that says sit and let it soak in. There's just not one like that. And this was a great disappointment to me because I love to sit. And up until I got to AA, I love to have folks do things for me. And when I got here, I found a noticeable lack of sympathy. About people wanting to do things for me. And I had a real tough sponsor in a way, but he believed that it was there if you went and got it, and thank God for him. I never could pay back in AA what I got in the way of wise counsel when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the fellow that contributed the most, to my survival, not to my getting well, but to my actual survival, was a man that under ordinary circumstances could have been filled with self-pity from the word go. He was a fellow who had no legs. He came into Alcoholics Anonymous on a bet. And came to a meeting such as this, an open meeting. His brother told him, said, I'll give you half this whiskey if you go to AA. And he went this night, and the wrong man talked. I'd love to say a word about that. They had an open meeting and had it scheduled, and way back in those days, they had Bishop Quinn, who was a great factor in our society from down Houston. They'd flown him up. Dear old Al B was the chairman. Although you might know him, he comes from these parts. And they had a regular scheduled program, but just as the meeting started and the auditorium was full, there came a fellow in the door from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, one of the early AA members. And Al saw him out in the audience as he came in and said, oh, I see Brother Ken has come in the door. Could we have a few words from him? And Ken was not a man of few words. He loved to give you the whole load, and he talked for an hour and 15 minutes. What was apparent to everybody, he ruined the whole meeting. Bishop Quinn got up and introduced himself and had to run to catch a plane. But Ken talked that night, and my sponsor pastor was sitting in the audience. He was the wrong man, and he was there by chance. And my sponsor never took another drink until the day he died. So I love to think of that, and I love to be very grateful for the fact that nothing, I think, can happen among us that is not for the good. When people set about with an unselfish motive in the idea of losing themselves in the trouble of somebody else, nothing can go wrong. Nothing, I believe, can go wrong. I walked into an AA meeting up in North Carolina this summer. There was a little place, and they were meeting in the back of the church. And this, here I go again, this old AA member was holding the meeting there. I think he was conducting it out of the field and stream or something. But he had four or five new members sitting there, and he was drilling them. I think really he would have loved to take them out back of the church and drill them a little bit. But he wouldn't let them say anything. And I said, he knew I was new to them. And he worked himself up to a big pitch about working with other alcoholics. And finally, after he thought he had his point made, he said to me, he said, "What do you think?" He said, "How long do you have to be an Alcoholics Anonymous to be qualified to work with another drunk?" And I shot him out of the saddle. I said, "I think you should be here at least 10 minutes. So strongly as I go along, and I see sometimes, and I talk to a drunk every now and then across that bed, but the most beautiful thing that I have ever seen is a new man in AA talking to a drunk. This is the greatest, I don't think God would ever give us anything greater than that, to be able to sit and watch this take place. Well, there was an old saying that used to be that there is none so fanatic as a new convert. But I believe this, and if I were going to see a drunk today, I would certainly like to get some guy that hadn't been around too long, take him with me, and let him say the things that he could do without any restraint, because I'm liable to try to make it too pretty or make it sound too good or try to use perfect English. And the communication of Alcoholics Anonymous is none of that. It is a communication of the heart, and there's something about it that we can't define, really. I think our book tells us that it's a matter of an understanding that we find when we come to AA. And I remember how I found an understanding when I wandered into this program. Now, I'll tell you a little. I've already told you how smart I am, and that's only taken 22 minutes. And what I've left out, you just have to take for granted. But I drank everywhere, just like you did. It used to be 20 questions that they had there. They still have them, don't they? Somewhere in some of our literature, don't they still have the 20 questions, you know, that your little faint, innocuous questions that really not much teeth in them, or they read, you know, very mildly, "Did your wife frown at you today?" or something like that. "Did you slip off of the sofa?" It takes about 40 of these to get you in this damn thing, you know. Well, I got some questions. It only takes a few to get you in here. Did you ever have the roof of your mouth sunburned? Did you ever talk in shorthand? get you to affiliate with this delicate group of ours. Did you ever wake up with a circus midget in bed? Loneliness that affects us in this thing. To be able to sit in a crowd of 1,000 people and be the loneliest person on earth. And this is one of the gifts that we get in AA. I think since the night I came to AA was the night that my loneliness was dispelled. It left me that night, and it's never returned. Because a face is a face now, and I don't know, I've seen you everywhere. And if I'm back again tomorrow night, I see you again, and I've learned to love you instead of walk on you and hate you, and resent you and take advantage of you if possible. So I think that the gift of laughter, even any kind of laughter, particularly unrestrained laughter, is one of the greatest gifts that we can experience today. And some of us, in looking back upon the ridiculous antics that we went through, and all the time, this is a heavy part of it, is we didn't know anything was wrong with it. And even if we had, we couldn't have talked about it. This is the only malady, I guess, known to man that he can't talk about. These gals get him a slip on the side here, an operation or something, tell everybody in the room about it. And people give them a lot of felicitations. But a drunk can't talk about it. He can't talk about it. You can't say to a man, move over, I want to keep there right now. Or I'm scratching because I've got them. You can't do this. You have to remain absolutely silent when you carry the disease of alcoholism. So this makes it twofold. Makes the load twice a day. You've got the disease per se, and then you can't carry it. And this is where the recovery lies, I believe. I began to recover immediately when they started letting me talk about it. When I could say it, something about being an alcoholic and not be ashamed of it. I'm sure you've heard me go through the routine many times about the stigma on alcoholism. When I came there, there was. Lord, yes, there was. We were ashamed of it even after coming there. It took a lot of guts to go down there to that place, they used to say. And I remember very well where two or three of us would gang up on the sidewalk and start a conversation, and we'd wait until no cars were passing, and then we'd duck upstairs. We didn't want anybody to see us. And now, really, I think if we have a problem at all, it's keeping out the social climbers in that area. Did you know that there are some people that come to AA because they think it's the thing to do? I was not one of those either. I didn't want to come to AA. This would have been the last place I would have come. Just come sit with you. Very interesting cake-eating, coffee-drinking bores, if you please. And I'm sure that had I had any other alternative, I'd have never been here. I didn't come to AA. I wouldn't have had any part of it. I would have died. But there was a man who found something in AA. I don't know how to describe that either. But he found something in AA, this fellow who I called my sponsor, and he came to see me. Unsolicited, and this is the most beautiful part of the story. And I sometimes get sick and tired of listening to the sophisticated theory, if you please, that if he wants it, let him come get it. I've heard that said around. He knows about it. But this fellow that came to see me evidently had not dwelled too long upon that theory. And he had evidently read some small portion of our book of experience. There are two. They say there's no must in AA. Well, I've been pallbearer for a lot of fellows that read that. But our book of experience tells us in two places that I'm real fond of. He used to tell me when I went to school that anything that had an exclamation point after it was a command or an exclamation of sorts. And I know the author of this book. I knew him very well and was with him many times. And I know how he gets carried away with himself about a lot of things. But there are two lines in our book of experience. One's in chapter 7, and it says, without any equivocation, it says, carry this message to the alcoholic, exclamation mark. It don't say if, It says, carry this message to the alcoholic, exclamation mark. Then there's another line in there that reads, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can stay sober regardless of anyone if he will but just trust in God. And if you read our book of experience and wonder about some of the mechanics of getting sober, you will find the expression clean house in 8 of the 11 chapters, and you'll find them in 7 of the 12 steps. That was one of Bill's favorite sayings, clean house, clean house. This was one of the things that amazed me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The night I came, I knew they were going to talk at great length about drinking. This was, a drinking organization. Its name implied that much, Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever the anonymous meant. But I just knew that whatever they said was going to be with reference to me physically drinking an ounce of alcohol. And it so happened that I walked in on a Tuesday night on a study group, and they were taking one of the steps, and they were not interpreting it, they were dissecting it. And they sat all this evening, and I sat there bewildered and in wonderment, because they never talked about drinking at all. They talked about these little things that were wrong with me, like hating and resenting and stealing and a few other things that every time they opened their mouth, they walked on me. And I thought, well, what on Christ's earth has this got to do with my drinking? And they patted me on the back and sent me home. Clean house is apparently the idea. So you see, this is what I found in AA, and I have come to believe that this may be the method that we find it, is doing something. I've heard a lot of statements about, oh God, there's some good ones coming out nowadays, most of them from people who don't want to do anything. One of them is a death. This is a killer. This one is the fellow that gets up and says, I don't have a drinking problem anymore. I've just got a thinking problem. I'm frightened for him. I've got a drinking problem. What's he maintaining if he ain't got no drinking problem? And the book talks about that a little bit. But they told me that I had this thing. There was no complete recovery from it. But if I would do a few certain things, I could handle it one day at a time. And this was a hard thing to me because I was a way out in the future fella. And I could dream the wildest dreams. It's been rumored that I drank wine. Some fella brought it to my attention here tonight. And of course, now this has a very serious implication. Well, it's not nice, really. You wouldn't think a fella like me drank wine, would you? Just looking at me? I talked to a church not so long ago when one of these little ladies with tennis shoes on came up and said, well, I would have never believed that you'd had a dream. But I did, and the dreams, the wildest dreams that you have from drinking. I never did really begin to live until I found wine. Nobody here ever drank it, huh? I guess. There's something about it. I don't know if it, people make a lot of fun of it, you know, and they look down their nose at wine, and wine nose, they call them. But I got to stick up for it a little. Wine is a great medicine, really. It'll cure hay fever. If you drink it like I did, you don't dare sneeze. Writing's the shame of it all. But I think that I remember a lot of things about my drinking career or escapades, if you please, about the things that happened to me, but I don't remember too much about the physical suffering. I think this passes into limbo. The things that I remember the most about my drinking were the humiliations and the indignities that I heaped upon myself, and no reason to say why it was happening. No reason, no answer. And to have an ever-loving wife whose reflex naturally made excuses. We lived in these years of making excuses for a condition that we didn't even know existed. I remember one of the old ladies in the neighborhood that said to my wife, she said, why do you live with a man like that? And my wife's loving reflex, she said, well, you don't know him when he's sober. And this old baby said, well, when is he sober? No understanding. And the humiliation, and you live with these things through the night and lay awake and multiply them by the thousands with never an answer because you don't know what's the matter with you. You don't really know anything's the matter with you. I'll tell you this, and my wife frowns on it with great disdain. In fact, sometimes she even denies it. But during my worst drinking, I was drinking one day in a bar in Sacramento. No, I mean in Roseville. This was a little railroad town, California. And I'd been in there all day. Did you ever stay all day with them? If we stayed on our jobs as well as I stayed in that bar, we'd be the owner before long, you know. Help them open and help them shut. This is it. But I've been in this little place all day drinking and napping a little and coming, you know, to and fro. And in the afternoon, I had my load on and got up and made my way out the door about 4 in the afternoon and walked right down the main street of this little town to our house, which at that time we were living with my wife's sister. And if you ain't tried it, don't do it. This was a real happy situation, you might say. And I walked in and lay down upon the bed. And to all appearances, I was asleep. Any other time, I would have been sound asleep. You know, hit the bed and he's gone. But this day, I was laying there in this semi-stratospheric state that we find ourselves in, coming and going. And this is the conversation that went on in the next room. My wife, in actual hysteria, cried out, and she said to her sister, said, what on God's earth would you do if you were living with a man like that? And her sister didn't hesitate a minute. She said, "Why, that poison the son of a bitch."
Time for me to go to AA. I didn't say it.
That was not the route that I took to get here. So I was maybe a little better off than some because I was more willing to listen. I had to make AA work. This was it. It was the last thing. I couldn't fail. The price of failure was too great for me. And I still hated the thought of giving up that booze. Oh my God, I loved it. And besides the booze, I loved the going out and getting away from reality. What were those famous words that Shakespeare, when Hamlet was portraying a crazy man, if any of you are as well read as I am, he said, it really goes like this, I haven't recited it in a long time, but it comes to me now, oh wine, this gloom that o'er me now hangs, dispel. Grant me thy careless laugh, thy mocking jest. Oh wine, grant thine oblivion to my soul. Well, with a profound statement like that, that Shakespeare must have belted that stuff around. Grant thine oblivion to my soul. This is what we were. This is when you get to the room, you have it. Oh, this old boy that's a little fella well mapped and helps him close by. There is not a whole lot wrong with him yet. But when he goes underground, he's got a problem now. This lone four-wall drinking where he sits at home and does it by himself and no one come out. This is the murderous, the tedious. This is in, as the scripture says, it's in the last days. This is just before you have it. And this is the state that I came to in. And God, you know, I've asked a lot of questions since I've come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and most of them have been answered. Usually I can find some real smart old AA member wandering around, and God knows they're full of answers. Sometimes you don't even have to furnish them with a question. Just they're the answer man, you know. We get in AA that way and we become to where we want to be everything to everybody. We kill a few doing it, but we make fun sometimes. But the only question that I have had answered to my particular satisfaction is how come I was one of the lucky minority to find this cockeyed mess? How come I was the lucky one? For every time a guy like me comes in AA, if you want to think of something to be grateful for when you go home tonight, for every fellow that, like me, that comes to AA and finds a solution to his problem, there's 10 out there walking and fishing to die. The flop house that I came out of in Sacramento had 18 beds in it. And I don't know where the other 17 fellas are. I don't know where they are, and I'm sure there must have been some of them there who were as worthy as I. By a great stretch of the imagination, there could have been some of them as smart as I am. How come I'm the lucky guy that gets to come to a facility like Alcoholics Anonymous that springs forth with nothing but good results in the solution? We were sitting in our club just day before yesterday in the evening, and the fellas were kicking it around there, talking about things that they were grateful for. It so happened that we had a lot of folks sitting there that had families. Each one of them started talking about his kids and how grateful they were that they said they were going to have Christmas where their family was together. And I sat there and thought, well, our facility of Alcoholics Anonymous is noted for putting families together. This is what AA is. This is what our facility is about. This is for putting families together again. This is not a selfish one-man disease. This is a family thing. And I like to remember the words of one of your old members over here, who was one of the greatest guys ever lived. His name was Icky. He's dead now. And he was one of the greatest spiritual counsels that a person could come close to in his rough and awkward way. He was one of the greats, and those of you who did not get to know Icky missed something. But he used to get up and tell about how thankful he was for his family being put back together. And he made one of the most simple statements that shoots over our heads sometimes. And he said, "Do you know that my wife and I have become friends?" And I sat there and it liked to knock me out of my seat. He said, "You know, my wife and I have become friends again." And I thought, this is what it's all about. And then I got to thinking about myself and how my wife and I were carted in front of a psychiatrist, and he said to us after the end of an interview, he said, "I don't know what God's earth you folks even live together for." He was that honest. He said, "You don't seem to have anything in common. You don't seem to want to try to understand one another. And do you know that after many years in AA, that I find myself with my wife, we sit on top of one another 30, 40 minutes. How about that?" And I always think about what Icky said, that my wife and I have become friends again. And I think this is the greatest gift that you could give in AA. It's to put a family together. It's what it's all about. I have a baby down in Tyler. And he said, "I'm his sponsor, so I'm not bragging about it." And he's fella's been sober now for 2 years. And I dug him out of his bed a couple of years ago, and he's one of our more eminent surgeons down there, one of them head knockers. And his whole complete life was in a shamble. You know, you wonder sometimes how a drunk can industriously work at lousing up his life. But this guy had, if it were possible, he'd even done a better job than I did. And I'm pretty smart. But everything about him was no. It was wrong. He just messed up. That's all it was to it. And two of the fellas on the staff at the hospital called me, and one of them said, "Do you still go down there to that place?" "Are you referring to Alcoholics Anonymous?" He said, "Yes, that's what I'm talking about." And I said, "Well, I sure do." And he said, "Well, I've heard that you're active in AA. What do you have to do to make an appointment with you?" So I said, "You don't have to do anything. What's your problem?" He said, "Well, we've got a fellow out here that's awful sick. And in essence, we're going to throw him off to the staff. We're going to pitch him out. And he's one of the finest that there is. One of the finest that there is. The only one we have here. And we believe that he's worth fooling with. And how would we make an appointment with you?" And I said, "It's better than that, friend. Just sit where you are, and I'll be there. And I'll have my office on a hot June afternoon. I'm not trying to put any halos on my head. I'm trying to tell you this is what AA is all about." And I, on the way out there, I was literally frightened to death because of the two people watching and the man in the bed, with no exception. All three of them were my intellectual superiors. And if I ever prayed in my life, I prayed that day, then what on Christ's earth can a stupid guy like me say to these three fellas? Two watching and one sick. I never did. I love to play to an audience, but not that kind. You go out and here he lays on the bed. He looks like, if you didn't know he was a neurosurgeon, he could have been a you. ever been to me. And I love what one of our old members says in Brisbane, that I never go see a drunk anymore. I always see me laying there in bed. When you get to where you don't see a drunk laying there and you see yourself, you're doing all right. They lay with a sheet rolled up like a pencil. And you know what he looks like. Hell, I don't have to tell you. And I made a little kick at him. And finally saw that I wasn't getting anywhere, and I hurt his feelings. And he ordered us out, and it like frightened these other two fellas to death. One of them was a doctor, and one of them was the administrator of the hospital. And so he shooed us out, get out of my house. I don't have to put up with anything like this. A man in my position. So we caucused on the front veranda. And he said, these two doctors said, what are we going to do? He said, this is about the last chance that he's ordered you out of the house. I said, that's fine. He said, well, what do you think you ought to do? I said, come back tomorrow. You can either be drunker or sober, one of the two. And we would just have another whack at him. So we went back tomorrow, and he was a little bit better mean, M-I-E-N mean. And was a little bit receptive, and we got him on his feet and took him to a man. And he got sober and stayed sober for 3 months, and then he became brilliant, which smelled the same as whiskey. And one of the little doctor there was Anderson, and called me and told me where he was. He was in, and he said, would you like to go with me and dig him out of this apartment? I said, no, you don't need that. You need a taxi cab driver for that. And they carted him off to a little place out here where he could rest and be to himself and get him dried out. And thank God for that facility. They had a man in charge there who leaves and telling a man about the true nature of his disease, and he got AA pounded into him every day. And he says, I don't know, I wasn't there, so he didn't get it from me, but he had some sort of an experience. Let us say that he might have seen himself for what he truly was. Our book talks of spiritual awakenings in many different manners, and nobody's prescribed the exact one yet. But whatever it was, he had a change of attitude. I like that. And he told this fellow about it. I believe our little doctor in the big book calls it a psychic change or psychic phenomenon. Call it anything you please. He had one. And he went to this fellow and said, what do you think I ought to do? He said, well, you ought to go find that fellow that told you about AA and make the next meeting. And back to my story. My wife and I don't have any children, and we're always lonely at Christmas time, no family to come in on us. We're always glad somebody had somebody to ask us somewhere. I'm telling you, you're a little stupid now, you know. But he had us in for his Christmas last year. And his wife was in South America in a hotel down there. Two of his kids had been charged, and my wife had handled them for narcotics violations. One of them was in Houston on another violation. Things were in absolute shambles when the fellow came to Eddie. And last Christmas we were in the home. And if AA had never done anything else, it put a family together. And I got to sit there and watch him be Santa Claus for a bunch of these kids that had actually been giving up his hopefulness. Alcoholics Anonymous
It has affinity for putting families together. It is a facility for, as it says in my book of experience, clear away the wreckage of the past. And I think I saw it that day more than any. But every time I go to leave, I don't have to go, maybe, but I've got to go to see you. To see where God has worked his wonders. Because every time before I came here, people told me about something. And in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I see it every trip. I would quote a very good friend of mine and say that I think God in keeping a lot of the mystery of his handiwork a secret from us. I think that we could see the things that happen among us here, it would blind us. I believe it would blind me to see what has transpired. When I see people like Andy and some more make another Bob or it's part of me. It's part of me. I talk too long, and I always do. I have a reputation for being long-winded, but I never tire of talking about the thing that has given me my life back. This is all it amounts to, really. I cheated somebody out of 21 years. And I can unashamed talk about God tonight. And I remember how I stayed away from him. I was so humiliated that I would cross the street as soon as people come out of the church. Lord, I kind of think I'm a teacher's pet now. Really, I do. I think I've had it better than you. Really, I do. I don't want to keep feeling that way. That I've had a real good go of it. So the question is still unanswered. How come I'm the lucky one to find this thing when so many of us have? Now, I'm a great believer in the theory that every old drunk walking out there is entitled to hear about AA once. I believe this very strenuously. And if you just stop in his track long enough, I'll tell him about it. I'm not the least bit ashamed to tell him about it. So it's real good for me to be here. I don't know whether the damn one of you feel any better about being AA. I hope they got something to eat after this is over with. But I've had ball. I do any time that I can stand close to somebody that has used this God-given facility for his or her recovery. Thank you very much.